This is the Does God Exist quarterly journal for the fourth quarter of the year 2020. John Clayton is your reader. Let me wish you all a very happy and successful holiday season. I hope that the year 2020 hasn't been as painful for you as it has for some, but that the year 2021 will be much better. So our blessings upon you from John and Cynthia Clayton, Roland Ernst, Linda Glover, and Carl Markison, the team that conducts this Does God Exist ministry. Our cover for this particular issue has a picture in outer space, and our lead article is titled Beyond Measure. Like many people, I have a routine that I follow to get my day started. My routine has both a spiritual and a physical component. I start the day by turning on my computer and going to NASA's Astronomy Picture of the Day. That's on apodnasa.gov. Our cover picture comes from that website on August the 30th, 2020. It shows nebula NGC 6357, where stars are still forming. The brightest star you see above the gas cloud is Pisme 24-1. And it is more than 200 times the mass of our sun. Hubble pictures have revealed that it is actually made up of three stars, each 100 times our sun's mass. Near the center of the picture, new stars seem to be breaking out of a cocoon. I spent some time looking at the latest picture from space and reading the explanation of what the image shows and what is unique about it. This leads me to think about the creation and what the Creator did to make such a view possible. It amazes me that God, who created the things we can see through our telescopes, would bother with our little planet and with the likes of me. Why? For the God who uses supernovas to produce the elements to make the world and my body care about me? How can I possibly be important enough to God that He, quote, so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life, John 3:16. My training as a scientist also tells me not to accept every claim or explanation of what we see in the world around us. I thought I understood why there is such a thing as dark matter. I know that when things spin, centrifugal force throws matter away from the center. Because galaxies spin, the fundamental laws of physics tell me that they should fly apart. But they don't fly apart, meaning that some hidden force or energy is balancing the centrifugal force and holding them together. Calling it dark matter or dark energy makes sense because we can't see whatever it is. As astronomers wrestle with this design and its cause, new pictures show that many galaxies don't have dark matter, yet they somehow still seem to hold together. The latest count of galaxies of this kind is 324 that have either lost their dark matter or were created differently. The nature of science is that no theory or explanation is so rigid or foolproof that it can't be proven wrong, or at least incomplete. Our understanding of even the most fundamental objects in space is limited and constantly changing. As I read scientific literature and books, I find more and more scientists in all fields talking about energies and forces outside of the familiar dimensions that we study in basic science classes. Neutrinos, quarks, hyperons, antimatter, superstrings, baryons, muons, leptons, parallel universes, and more challenge our imaginations and tell us that what we see of the creation is very limited. Our three-dimensional world is just a small part of dimensions far beyond our own. Even though much of this cannot be tested or falsified, and thus is not a scientific fact, it does have a message for us. It challenges us to think beyond what our senses can reveal. This leads me to another attempt to comprehend the nature of God. It is not an exercise in futility, because the Bible approaches the question of what God is by listing His properties. That's a technique we use in science. We can't see an electron, but we can understand it by studying its properties. We know an electron has a negative charge, that it spins clockwise in a north magnetic field, and that its mass is 1 over 1842 that of a proton. There are a whole plethora of properties of electrons that allow us to have a field of science known as chemistry, which helps us understand how molecules form. My understanding of God is very similar to my understanding of an electron. The Bible uses the same technique to help us build our understandings of God. It tells us that God is not flesh and blood, Matthew 16:17, and that God is not a man, Numbers 23:19. The Bible also tells us that God cannot be seen with human eyes, 1 John 4:12. We know that we are created in God's image, Genesis 1:27, but we also know that it is not our bodies that are in God's image, but our spiritual makeup. John 4:24 tells us that God is a spirit. It is clear that what separates us from the animal world is our creative ability in art and music, our worship, our ability to feel guilt, our sympathy, and our capacity to love unselfishly. Read 1 John 4:8-16. We know that God created time at the beginning and that he exists outside of time, 2 Peter 3:8, 1 Corinthians 2:7, Psalms 90:4, Psalms 102:27, Revelation 22:13. Do I totally understand all there is to know about electrons because I know some of their properties? The answer is obviously no. Science has found particles that explain what caused charge and mass. I know enough about electrons to teach chemistry and to work on processes where the control of electrons is essential. I also know that there are dimensions beyond our own that give us a hint of a full understanding of the electrons in the future. Scientists have never seen an electron, but they use the properties of electrons to create electronic equipment and understand chemical processes. Do I understand all there is to know about God because I know some of his properties? Certainly not. But what I do know allows me to have confidence in praying to him and living my life in a way that reflects my understanding of God. I sense God's presence in those morning hours when I plan my day and talk to God about my concerns for those people and things I love. One of the many things that science and the Bible agree on is the fact that our existence is not eternal. Built into the cosmos is the second law of thermodynamics, which tells us that the cosmos is moving toward a condition of disorder called entropy. As we watch stars and galaxies on the NASA site, we see that all stars die and take their planets with them. There is no doubt that the cosmos is not eternal. The Bible agrees with this assessment, telling us that, quote, the heavens will disappear with a roar, the elements will be destroyed by fire, and the earth and everything in it will be laid bare. That's from 2 Peter 3:12. Science cannot tell us anything about what happens to us when the three-dimensional world we live in is dissolved. The Bible assures us that time will end, and that we will enter a dimension in which not only does time not exist, but all the negatives that depend upon time will also cease to exist. There will be no more tears, no more sorrow, crying, or pain when our existence in this three-dimensional world ends. Revelation 21 tells us there will be a new heaven and a new earth, and that all things will be made new. In 1 Corinthians 15:40-57, Paul tells us that our bodies will be changed. Those verses also describe our present physical properties and the changes that will make all we endure here become a distant memory. Woodland recycling system. I have lived my entire life in the woodlands of North America. I love walking through the vast areas of pines, birches, maples, oaks, blueberries, ferns, mosses, aspens, and raspberries. To me, it is pure joy to sit in the woods or in a bow on a lake or a river and listen to the sounds of nature. I especially enjoy the fall when the colors become vivid and animal life is in a rush to prepare for winter. The falling of leaves to the ground followed by frost and snow adds its own magic to the joy of being in the woods. What we are seldom aware of is the massive amount of waste produced in the woods. We all know about leaves that probably have had some cruel words about them when they cover our lawns. The fact is that a constant rain of organic material falls to the floor of the woods. Limbs, bark, twigs, dead grass, moss, sawdust, animal excrement, and carcasses pile up year after year. Yet when you walk in the woods, the floor is made of a thin, spongy layer of black soil. What happens to the massive amount of debris that falls to the forest floor every year? The answer to this question is underappreciated by most of us. God has built into the forest an incredibly efficient recycling system. When something organic falls to the forest floor, it is swarmed on by bacteria, termites, ants, fungi, and worms, which form the basis of the food chain for higher forms of life. Nutrients in the woods seldom last longer than a few weeks at the most. Rain is moderate and percolates through these nutrients, rapidly helping them find their way back into the forest living tissues. Those places where there are not dense forests have a completely different system of recycling. In the far north, where forests are not dominant, migrating salmon provide the ecological balance needed. In desert areas, the lack of ecological balance means that life for humans is difficult at best. Human survival depends on God's recycling system. In some areas of the rich farmlands of America, we can measure the soil in feet. That allows us to grow our grain crops that sustain our existence. But those areas were built in an ancient forest. God told us to take care of what he gave us, see Genesis 2:15. One part of caring for the earth is to copy God's recycling techniques and replenish the nutrients we take from the soil, rather than polluting the air by burning them or polluting the ground by bagging in plastic and burying them. The benefits of Thanksgiving. In the United States, Thanksgiving became a national holiday in 1863 when Abraham Lincoln made a Thanksgiving Day proclamation. He asked citizens to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November next as a day of thanksgiving and praise. The Civil War was going on at that time. Various colonies had set aside special days of thanksgiving long before, so this was not a new concept. Most of us have heard about the Pilgrim Thanksgiving in Plymouth, Massachusetts, the Wampanoag people in 1621. But it wasn't until 1941 that Congress finally designed the fourth Thursday in November as Thanksgiving Day, thus creating a federal holiday. Our belief system affects how we observe and participate in the holiday. As America became more prosperous and as science and technology have made our lives more comfortable, we have bought into the idea that we are the sole controllers of what we have and what we will have in the future. Survival of the fittest has led to a mindset that we must be the fittest in every area of life. Some religions have adopted this mantra to justify the extermination of those who are not part of their faith. Genocide, abortion, euthanasia, racism, and abuse of all kinds are rooted in the mindset that survival of the fittest produces. Historically, God has always encouraged his children to view Thanksgiving as essential. In Leviticus 22:29, God told the Israelites to participate in a sacrifice of thanksgiving. The sacrifice was vital for them to be accepted by God. Jesus Christ, in Matthew 5-7, turned the notion of survival of the fittest upside down. In those three chapters, he gave statement after statement about behaviors and beliefs that did not promote the individual's survival, but submission and promotion of others. In Ephesians 5:4, Paul takes all of the loose talk, crudeness, and covetous behaviors and says, instead, let there be thanksgiving. Black Friday is a good indicator of what has happened in America. Some people sit outside a discount store in the rain all day, Thursday and Thursday night, to get a bargain on Friday for something they really didn't need. So what is the benefit of Thanksgiving? And I don't just mean the holiday. Thanksgiving is something we need to live daily and weekly. A person who looks at the stars and planets and looks at living things and looks at family should feel a sense of thanksgiving. When we look in the mirror, we must reflect on how blessed we are to be alive. We can be thankful that we can think and see and feel and smell and hear. With thanksgiving, we are not looking to see how we can subdue someone else or get what someone else has. Thankful people are at peace within themselves. When Jesus calls us to live at peace with everyone, to turn the other cheek, to give to others, to show mercy and gratitude to others, he calls us to the real meaningful things in life. None of us likes to be involved in stress, fighting, bickering, or war. But as long as survival of the fittest is our key to living, these destructive drives will be part of our makeup. that jeopardize our health, our relationships, and our joy of being alive. A key to joyous living is to have an attitude of gratitude. Thanksgiving should be a daily, hourly activity. Pause to give thanks every time you eat. Spend some time looking at your family and those around you, and thank God for them. Be thankful that God, through Jesus Christ, has made it possible for you not to live in fear of death and dying. You can rejoice with the knowledge that life is only a small snippet of your total existence. And with all its joy, it is still the worst you will ever have to experience. The Magi's gifts. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Matthew 2:11. There has been a great deal of confusion about the Magi's visit to the Christ child. Not only are there differences of opinion about who the Magi were, but even their gifts have been misunderstood. Atheists have claimed that the whole story is nonsense, because Mary and Joseph could make so much money from these three items that Joseph wouldn't have to work as a carpenter. We assume that whatever value the gifts had would have helped to support the family during their sojourn in Egypt. At the time of Christ, these gifts were quite expensive. Today on Amazon, you can buy frankincense resin for $16 a pound and myrrh resin from $16 to $36 a pound. Gold, on the other hand, is selling for more than $1,800 an ounce. But the value of the Magi's gift was not primarily financial. Frankincense and myrrh are resins extracted from wounds in the bark of trees that grow in northeast Africa and southern Arabia. Frankincense was used to soothe the gums and to treat respiratory problems, skin infections, and bruises. Modern researchers have found that frankincense has antiseptic, antifungal, anti-inflammatory properties. It also contains flavonoids that cause lung bronchia to dilate, helping with breathing problems. But frankincense was and is burned in worship of deity. For that reason, it seems to be an appropriate gift for the Christ child. People used myrrh as an anesthetic. Soldiers gave Jesus wine mingled with myrrh during his crucifixion to relieve his suffering. He rejected the offering. Modern research has shown that myrrh can lower cholesterol levels, and it has been used to treat heart disease. A side effect of myrrh is that it stimulates the thyroid, resulting in accelerated metabolism. Myrrh was used to embalm royal mummies like King Tutankhamun. The Jews also used it for embalming bodies for burial. The gift of myrrh hints at the death of Christ. Even gold was valued for medicinal purposes, not just business transactions. Roman doctors prescribed gold dissolved in acid to cure appendicitis. Today, the drug Orifafin is a gold salt listed by the World Health Organization to treat rheumatoid arthritis. But gold was and is associated with kings and crowns. This gift from the Magi indicates a kingly future for Jesus. The point of all this is that the expensive gifts of the Magi had symbolic meaning. They were foreshadowing the death of Jesus, but also his deity and kingship. We know very little about the Magi except that they came to worship the Christ child. Their gifts honored the one who was God in the flesh and who would eventually die to redeem all who would accept him as their king. Two questions science can't answer, by Roland Ernst. Have you ever heard of someone say that evolution makes God unnecessary? Quote, "Since evolution can explain the existence of everything, why do we need God to explain why we are here?" End of quote. When someone tells you that, you might want to remind him of two fundamental questions that science cannot answer. Question number one, why is there something rather than nothing? You could say, why is there anything rather than nothing? Contemplate this question. Scientists agree that the universe is not eternal, after denying it for thousands of years, but that's another subject. First, there was nothing. Then suddenly something appeared. That something was a teeny speck containing every bit of matter energy that now exists in what we know as the entire universe. The universe, with its billions of galaxies, each containing billions of stars and untold planets, was contained in that speck that scientists call a singularity. It included every bit of material that became dark matter and dark energy, which science tells us makes up most of the universe. It also contained the makings of every nebulous, pulsar, quasar, black hole, anything else that we don't even know about yet. It included the ingredients for every element and molecule that make up everything we can see and touch, including ourselves. How did nothing become something? Or perhaps we should say, how did nothing become everything? To make the question even more confounding, time and space did not exist before that cosmic creation event, commonly called the Big Bang. So how did nothing, meaning no time or space or matter or energy, become everything we can see and everything we can't see? Just thinking about that can make your head spin. How could nothing become everything with no cause? It had to have a cause. What is the cause? That is the crucial question. It is a question that must be answered by both theist and atheist. Of course, theists believe in God, and that is their answer. Atheists must find another solution to the question. The late scientist Stephen Hawking thought he had the answer in his book, The Grand Design. He stated, quote, "Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing. Why the universe exists, why we exist, it is not necessary to invoke God to light the blue touch paper and set the universe going," end of quote. Hawking was a brilliant man, but that seems to me to be a rather weak answer. When atheists such as Hawking answer the question of cause, they are describing their God, small g. Whatever someone takes as the ultimate source of all that exists in this physical universe can only be described as that person's God. If Hawking believed that gravity was the ultimate source, gravity was Hawking's God. Anyone who thinks through the idea of existence must contemplate the ultimate cause of why we are here. You are here because of your parents. They live because of their parents. And on until you get to Adam and Eve. But what's before the first humans? For an atheist, evolution describes the ancestry from there back to the primordial soup, or whatever birthed the original life form. That leads to a second question. How did lifeless matter spontaneously become alive? How did carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, phosphorus, calcium, potassium, and the other lifeless elements become a living cell, and eventually us? Science had been working for years to create life in the laboratory. They thought they had made an early breakthrough in 1952 with the Miller-Urey experiment. We now know that the atmosphere in that experiment does not resemble the earliest atmosphere, thus invalidating the finding. Also, the experiment only created some amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins, but far from a living cell. I have an Associated Press news article in my files. The headline reads, quote, "Scientists believe artificial life will be possible in 3 to 10 years. That report is dated August 20th, 2007. In 2020, the artificial creation of life is still years away if it ever happens. If a team of scientists succeeds in creating a living cell capable of reproducing, what will they have proven? They will have shown that life arises spontaneously from non-life? No. They will have proven that great intelligence under carefully controlled conditions can turn non-living matter into life forms. They will have shown that life is not an accident, but the creation of an intelligent being. That is what the Bible has said for thousands of years. See Genesis 1. Furthermore, in making that living cell, they will be using elements and molecules that they did not create. Where did those elements come from? That takes us back to question number one. There's a story about a scientist who challenged God, saying that there was no big deal to create a man from the dust of the ground. God said, go ahead and do it. The scientist grabbed up a handful of dust, and God interrupted him, saying, wait a minute, make your own dust. If life can come from non-life without intelligent intervention, why did it only happen once in our planet's history? Why isn't life popping up from non-life in swamps today? Okay, so the atmosphere and conditions were different back on the early Earth. How did those just right conditions merely happen? And did they occur in only one location? Why didn't life pop up in many places? The more we consider how the cosmos and life began, the more questions we have. More questions science cannot answer. The two main questions we have considered cannot be answered by science today, and probably never will be. Science can only devise hypotheses on those two challenges because events involved happened long ago. Without inventing a time machine to take us back, any hypothesis cannot be proven or falsified. So the bottom line is, even if you could prove evolution from a single cell life form to human beings, that would not eliminate the need for God. Science has no answer to the question, what is the purpose of the universe? If the cosmos just happened without an intelligent causer, then it cannot have an ultimate purpose. This is also a more personal question. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Science can't answer that either. If you are merely the result of chance evolution, you are no more valuable than a frog or an earthworm. You're just an accident. Is your God a random gravity fluctuation of nothing? Or a personal God who created you in his image with a purpose for your life? If the latter is your answer, you are infinitely valuable and you are loved. All of this leads to the most basic and essential question of all. Does God exist? Scientist and God. Atheists attempt to suggest that scientists are intelligent people who have rejected faith and do not believe in God. The fact is that some of the most productive scientists who have ever lived are believers in God. We share some of these thoughts with you in this column, and our scientist for this quarter is Galileo Galilei, from 1564 to 1642, the founder of experimental physics and heavily persecuted by the Catholic Church for his scientific work. And here are some of his statements. Quote, to the Lord whom I worship and thank, that governs the heavens with his eyelid, to him I return tired, but full of living. When I reflect on so many profoundly marvelous things that persons have grasped, sought, and done, I realize even more clearly that human intelligence is a work of God and one of the most excellent. The Holy Scriptures cannot err, and the degrees therein contained are absolutely true and inviolable. But its expounders and interpreters are liable to err in many ways. The Holy Bible can never speak untruth whenever its true meaning is understood. Cynthia's Corner by Cynthia Clayton. God became human. Why? There are many more religions and many concepts of God. If we are going to dedicate our lives to believing in God and living accordingly, we must have proof or evidence of his existence. We must also understand who he is and what he wants of us. How can we know this? After all, God is a spiritual being, not human, and we can't see him. But we see God's existence through the things he has made. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. Romans 1, verses 19 and 20. God says his creation is evidence that he exists. However, because he wants us to know him personally, he has communicated directly with us from the time of the first humans, Adam and Eve. when they spoke with God. Though they didn't see him, they heard him. He continued to communicate with his chosen people by many means. Voices, visions, and dreams, angel messengers, and his prophets. God chose special people to write down his words by inspiration. 2 Timothy 3:16, Galatians 1, verses 11 and 12. We call that record the Holy Bible. The inspiration of the Bible can be proven in many ways. For more information on this, contact us. God wants all humans to know him personally and live eternally with him after this human existence ends. He did one more thing to show us who he is and that cannot be denied or refuted. He sent his son into this world as a human baby to live with us for about 33 years. His human name was Jesus. He was born of a virgin by the power of the Holy Spirit. As an adult, he did undeniable miracles that only God could do. He healed the blind, the deaf, the mute, the paralyzed, and those with acute and chronic illnesses. He commanded the elements to obey him by calming storms, changing water to wine, and providing unlimited quantities of food. He commanded demons to obey him and brought people back from the dead. Those miracles prove that he is the Son of God in human form, John 20, verses 30 and 31. The greatest miracle and proof of his deity was his resurrection from the dead. He appeared to more than 500 people over 40 days and proved he was alive, Acts 1 and verse 3. God became human to show us who he is and how much he loves us, and how we can have a relationship with him through his Son, Jesus, John 3, verses 16. And 17. Danny designs self-destructive defense. How can an ant defend against a predator by blowing itself up? The worker ants of a species that lives in Malaysia and Brunei use self-destruction defense. Let me explain. These ants have two glands filled with a toxic glue running the length of their bodies. When the ant seems to be losing its battle with the predator, it makes the ultimate sacrifice. By violently contracting its abdominal muscles, the ant ruptures its body. The explosion scatters sticky poison in all directions, disabling the predator. How can that benefit the ant? Obviously, the ant dies. But its action spares the rest of the colony from the predator. Humans sometimes sacrifice their own lives to save others. But unlike humans, ants are not conscious of the fact that they are sacrificing themselves for their colony. How can we explain this by natural selection? Self-sacrificing ants would not reproduce to pass on that trait to their descendants. It must have been designed into the ants by the master designer of life. These ants produce self-destructive defense, even though they don't understand the concept of self-sacrifice. However, I believe their creator does. It's expressed beautifully in the Bible. See John 15:13 and John 3:16. Whirlpool fishing. Many times we see animal behavior that seems impossible to explain. A small wading bird called the red-necked phalarope spends its summers in the Arctic regions and winters in tropical oceans. These birds have a curious way of stirring up a meal when the food is too deep in the water for them to reach. The phalarope swims in a small, tight circle faster and faster to form a whirlpool. The spinning vortex will bring up food from the bottom of shallow waters in the way a tornado can lift objects from the ground. When the whirlpool brings up some insects or crustaceans to the surface, the phalarope reaches its bill into the vortex and plucks them out. Sometimes the bird saves energy by finding a spot where converging current or tidal action bring food to the surface. Using high-speed photography, researchers found that the phalarope creates a vortex that is over 3 feet deep. The vortex acts as a miniature tornado, bringing food up from where the bird can reach it. You could understand how one bird might learn this skill, but it seems to be genetically implanted since baby birds do the spinning even when they have no contact with adult birds. Another strange thing about these birds is that the females display brighter colors than the males, and they go after and even fight over males. The males are left to incubate the eggs and raise the chicks, while females may be even headed south for the winter. There is a never-ending variety of fascinating creatures in this world. We think the design, balance, and variety we see in nature testifies to the genius and creativity of God. We see in phalaropes, as in most animals, that God has given them a genetically based technique for acquiring food so they can survive. News and notes. Bibles printed in 2020. By the end of 2020, the total number of Bibles printed will be 95 million. That is nearly double the number printed 20 years earlier. In 1900, 5 million Bibles were published, and you can find them in motel rooms everywhere. In the 1950s, Bibles were distributed to every student at the start of the school year. In 60 years, we have moved to the point where schools are sued for allowing Bible distribution, and schools take disciplinary action against a child or a teacher for bringing a Bible to school. In 1900, there were 2,300 people for every one Bible printed. Now that figure is 82 people per Bible. In spite of that, in many countries, Bibles are hard to find. There are ministries attempting to change that. As secularism, atheism, and paganism continue to attack the Bible, we can expect to see more conflict and power struggles. Conflict is rising in America and continues in much of Africa and Asia. This situation highlights the mission of this ministry. The total of Bibles printed means little if people don't bother to read them because they don't believe in God. A presentation of the evidence for God, the Bible, and the teachings of Jesus, along with the living examples of real Christians, can change the world. Antarctic glacier is melting. Two of the most massive Antarctic glaciers have broken loose from their land connections and are floating in the ocean. This is another evidence of global warming and a warning to the world that we must pay attention to the coming rise in sea level. When ice is exposed to air on land, it absorbs a minimum of heat. So melting on the land mass is very slow. In water, however, the heat exchange is very rapid. The melting of ice is much faster once it is in water, and the Thwaites Glacier, the larger of the two Antarctic glaciers involved, is one of the fastest changing glaciers on Earth. Job 38, verses 22 through 23, refers to the treasures of the snow and says that this frozen water is reserved against the time of trouble. In Earth's design, the snow and ice preserve water and provide a vital heat sink to the whole planet. The polar caps have been the primary water storage areas. Glaciers are also part of the design of Earth to make it hospitable for life. Rising sea levels present a potential catastrophe we can avoid if we take care of the planet as God instructed us to do. Realize that the possible flooding is a consequence of human activities, not a vindictive act of God. Money buys science. Jeffrey Epstein, the late millionaire who sexually abused many minors, donated $6.5 million to Harvard University. As a result, he was appointed as a visiting fellow, even though he had no academic qualifications. Epstein had a close connection with Harvard's Program for Evolutionary Dynamics and visited their offices over 40 times between 2010 and 2018, even though he was a registered sex offender at the time. That meant he had a key card and a passcode with which he could enter buildings during off hours. Epstein fancied himself as a latter-day eugenicist who wanted to seed the human race with his own DNA. He got some researchers at Harvard to give support to his ideas. This affair between Epstein and Harvard shows clearly that academic institutions are vulnerable to being bought. Universities must ensure that research funding is based on merit, not cronyism. There have been cases where researchers faked a discovery because their funding would be cut off if they didn't produce results. Survival of the fittest seems to be the moral standard used in research funding. And having money to do research only comes to those who are viewed as being, quote, fit. Fitness in this case means being able to produce discoveries that get front page acclamation. Did science find life on Venus? In the past few months, we saw several headlines suggesting that scientists have found life in the atmosphere of Venus. As usual, the media have sensationalized a scientific discovery. The fact is that a Japanese robotic satellite orbiting Venus since 2015 records data in the ultraviolet spectrum. The satellite detected spectra for a chemical phosphine. That's pH3. Phosphine is a flammable, toxic gas made of one phosphorus atom attached to three hydrogen atoms. It is difficult to make in a typical chemistry lab, but some microbes can make phosphine. Finding a chemical in the upper clouds of Venus where the temperatures are low enough for the gas to exist raised questions about whether microbes could have produced it. It is possible that the phosphine could have been produced by conditions on Venus that are not available on Earth. The environment of Venus is highly toxic, even to microbes, so microbe production is unlikely. Scientists have found many of the chemicals essential to life were possibly produced by living organisms on several moons in the solar system. The environmental parameters of all those places are so extreme that no astronomer expects to see an alien walking around. The Bible doesn't say that the Earth is the only place where life exists, and it may be that God has created life elsewhere. Did science find life on Venus? No. No, this is the newest media hype. It does not tell us anything we didn't already know. But the discovery is interesting. Mighty Mouse and drug and space travel. One of the problems with space travel is that the body was designed to live on Earth. When people are in weightlessness for an extended period of time, they lose muscle and bone mass. This loss can be as much as 20%. A possible solution might be called the Mighty Mouse drug. Scientists have developed a drug that blocks a pair of proteins that typically limit muscle mass. When scientists treated mice with this drug, they maintained their weight and muscle mass, even when they were in the International Space Station for a month. The application of this research can do more than provide a way for humans to survive a trip to Mars. It may also benefit people who are confined to a better wheelchair. This research reminds us that God designed our bodies to function in Earth's gravity, just as He designed the Earth to support life. He has also given us the ability to use science to find solutions to our physical limitations, such as the Mighty Mouse drug. College mind control. One of the challenges that college students face in America today is the fact that many of their professors try to force their own personal opinions upon them. In August, The Week magazine reported on a case at Iowa State University. Professor Chloe Clark announced that she would eject any student who engaged in saying anything negative about Black Lives Matter, gay marriage, or legal abortion. Say goodbye to academic freedom for students being able to express their own opinions. A free and open discussion leads to understanding and learning. There is no way to advance these things when professors attempt to force their young disciples into college mind control. To make matters worse, they are doing it while being supported by public tax dollars and high-priced tuition paid by the parents. Dogs for dinner. In August, The Week magazine reported that North Korean government is confiscating all pet dogs for use as food. How many North Koreans regard feeding a pet as wasteful? And the communist government labels keeping a pet as a bourgeois extravagance. Authorities in North Korea are forcing households with pet dogs to surrender the animals for dog meat distribution to restaurants and meat markets. Planned Parenthood defeat. In 2016, the Indiana legislature passed a law signed by then-Governor Mike Pence requiring women to have an ultrasound at least 18 hours before an abortion. Planned Parenthood succeeded in blocking the law by tying it up in various courts, including the United States Supreme Court. Now, according to Indiana's Attorney General, Planned Parenthood has conceded defeat. With the ultrasound requirement, when a woman sees her baby moving its limbs and making facial expressions, she may decide not to have the abortion. One of the problems with abortions is that many women have guilt and psychological reactions in later years. The ultrasound may avoid some of that. The United States Supreme Court in Louisiana abortion law case is apparently why Planned Parenthood conceded defeat. The court struck down the Louisiana law, but Planned Parenthood seems to be concerned about wording in Chief Justice John Roberts' opinion might justify other restrictions on abortion. Thus, the state of Indiana and Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky agreed to ask the United States District Court to dismiss the lawsuit and end the injunction. Would you recognize Jesus? Interestingly, people portray Jesus according to their culture. Some artwork shows him as a light-skinned, blue-eyed Scandinavian. I have seen pictures showing Jesus as a black-skinned, dark-eyed African. I have also seen pictures showing him as a man with typical Oriental face features. The closest picture physically is one that shows Jesus with characteristic Jewish features. The fact is that all these pictures are correct. However, all of them must fit the description of Matthew 25. In that passage, Jesus gives 6 different scenarios that tell us how you would recognize Jesus in someone standing before you. Those 6 scenarios describe Jesus as being one who is hungry, thirsty, a stranger needing a place to sleep, naked, sick, and imprisoned. Jesus tells his followers who have taken care of people with these problems that Jesus was the one they treated well. See Matthew 25, verses 35 through 40. Many people are looking for Christ with the wrong standards as to how to recognize him. Well, that is the quarterly journal for the fourth quarter of 2020. I hope that you have a good celebration of the end of this year and that 2021 will be full of solutions and no new problems. This is John Clayton thanking you for listening and wishing you a very happy and prosperous new year.